welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley reporting to you from Washington, D.C., and it's the afternoon of Friday, January 30th here in Washington, D.C., and what a week it has been. This is a landmark time in world history, a genuine turning point, and this program has contributed at least something to the success of Syriza, right? We've been following the Greek left party, left union, Syriza, since 2012. And you'll also perhaps remember that when we had the founding of the United Front Against Austerity in October of 2012, we had an address specifically from the current finance minister of Greece, Yanis Varoufakis. At that point, he was a professor, part of this opposition party, but he has now become the finance minister of Greece. And in the scene that you've got to see, you can see this on Russia Today, I guess, gives you the best version. Yanis Varoufakis, now the finance minister of Greece, has just today told the representative of the European Union finance ministers, and that is a guy called Yeroen Dijsselbloem. Mein Herr Dijsselbloem is told that you are pursuing an anti-European policy. Your austerity policies are anti-European. And this was very interesting. It was the conclusion of a negotiating session between Varoufakis and Dijsselbloem. And Dijsselbloem was rebuffed, saying, you have a policy which is rotten. It's based on a rotten basis. And, of course, Dijsselbloem is there not just as the finance minister of the Netherlands and not just as the representative of this floating crap game of all the European Union finance ministers. No, he's there as an austerity enforcer. He's the bailout administrator, right? He's the, in the eyes of the Troika, he's the austerity man, right? So he's supposed to make sure that everything is done. This reminds me of the role of Parker Gilbert. Parker Gilbert in Germany in the 1920s was the U.S. reparations representative, right? He was supposed to make sure that the Germans paid up. Didn't matter what happened. They had to pay. So that's Dijsselbloem. Call him the bailout administrator. So the upshot is Varoufakis says, we will not negotiate with the Troika. We're not going to talk to the International Monetary Fund. We're not going to talk to the European Central Bank. And we're not going to talk to the European Commission under this Juncker, right? Representative of bankers, right? Banker's boy from Luxembourg. That's all there is in Luxembourg these days is offshore banks, shady, unreliable. You get the idea. So that's a great day, and that certainly shocked this oligarch, right, this representative of finance predators. You should see the film. It's extremely awkward handshake at the end, right? Dijsselbloem can't wait to get out of the room. He's looking in the other direction. You can see him screwing his face up into this awful grimace as Varoufakis goes through the stuff. So that's just one scene out of all this. So we of the United Front Against Austerity and the Tax Wall Street Party, and that's, of course, taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com, taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. We are happy to see this. We have done everything possible. You've been listening to the reports of Michael Chiotinis from Athens, both in 2012 and also more recently. Let's just sum up some of the lessons for the U.S., because we do not have a lot of time. The first lesson is a negative one. This week we had Chris Hayes come on MSNBC and saying, imagine if Occupy Wall Street took over the U.S. government. Well, sorry, Chris, this is exactly not what has happened. No way, Jose. It's not like Occupy. In fact, it's the opposite of Occupy in many ways. You'll remember that the absolute imbecility of Occupy Wall Street was to say, we don't have any demands and we won't have any. We don't want to have any. They're dangerous because you might win your demands and then you'd be co-opted and then you couldn't be an anarchist anymore and defecate in the park. Oh no, that would be the end of the world. Remember the Occupy program was that everybody was going to join you in the park. So therefore what they talked about was not a program that would be of interest to everybody, but that would simply, praise their General Assembly, their various mind-destroying methods, the human microphone, and this consensus method, and this other straitjacket they put themselves in. In the case of Syriza, it's quite the opposite. We have, as we went through last week, an articulated, detailed program of mass traction economic demands to make sure that the poorest people have electricity, that they have food, that they have medical care, that they have a home, that they don't have to pay taxes, that they won't be crushed by debt, that they won't be harassed by tax collectors, and so forth. 300,000 new jobs. In other words, dozens of programmatic points, which, unfortunately, the Occupy Wall Street could never see their way to getting to, right? They could never really come up with anything. So mass traction economic demands. And that's, of course, what we've been recommending. Also, the program of Syriza is a new deal for Europe, a pan-European new deal. Well, that's us. Occupy doesn't have it, but United Front Against Austerity and the Tax Wall Street Party certainly does. And this is not just pie in the sky. A 50% write-down on the Greek public financial debt. $320 billion, cut it in half to $160 billion, and you can begin to talk and to breathe. The word this week was that the era of suffocating austerity, choking, strangling austerity, is coming to an end. Also notice, in the catalog of demands from Syriza, we don't have a big hue and cry about radical environmentalism. We don't have global warming, climate change, carbon tax. My God, no inkling. And nothing about cap and trade and these other monstrosities of the U.S. Democratic Party. The program is pro-labor. Obviously, the left liberal mushhead is anti-labor. It's pro-worker, too, as individual workers. Time to roll back what is called reforms. And remember, we've been looking at the Wall Street Journal this week and what they write about this stuff. And they say, well, it's time to have an overhaul of the labor market, right? It's time to have reforms. It's time to have flexibility. Well, when you hear those words, run for your life, because those are frauds, right? Overhauls, and so forth. On Monday, January 26th, the Wall Street Journal is writing that Samaras lost. His chief failing was the lack of conviction and skill in implementing reforms to labor markets. When they say reforms, they mean strip you of your rights and call that a reform or an overhaul. And flexibility means you're fired. So Syriza rejects all of that. And the analogous party here in the United States is the Tax Wall Street Party, the United Front Against Austerity, not Genome, Genie, Michael Moore, or any of these people. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. And if you want to get in touch with the Tax Wall Street Party, which is now the center of attention over here, we're getting calls from people saying, explains Syriza to us. Well, good. We are the ones who can explain it best. Certainly not Michael Moore or Gnome or Amy. At the same time, if you want to get involved, taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com, taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. So we've gone through it. Mass traction economic demands, a new deal for Europe. Malthus radically downplayed, right? Radical environmentalism, hard to find, scarcely there. Pro-labor, pro-worker, another big departure for our left liberal mushheads. And pro-infrastructure, certainly there are factions of Syriza that are pro-infrastructure. And if that's not enough, there's a coalition partner, the Independent Greeks. Now, you heard Michael Chiotinas on this program predict that that would be the coalition partner. And they're supposed to be the right wing. Another good benefit here. Don't be a prisoner of the left-right spectrum. That's often a fraud. Tsipras was told by various editorial writers, oh, you should make a deal with Stavros Theodorakis of the River Party, right, the Topatomi Party. No, he didn't do that. That was very wise. He went immediately to Kamenos, the stocky new defense minister. Now, Kamenos is pro-infrastructure. He's talking about the port of Piraeus. He's talking about the port of Thessaloniki. He's talking about all kinds of European-centered infrastructure. So that's also there. And this is a principled alliance. In other words, this is not some swindle between Tsipras and Kamenos. No. This is a highly principled thing, that austerity is unacceptable. And as far as the ethno-cultural issues, well, those have been used for a long time to divide. Let's just bracket them and put them aside as we fight for our economic survival. And, of course, a lot of the mushheads are disappointed because they want to see something that's anti-euro. Well, if you're in Greece, you're against the euro. You know who you can vote for? The Golden Dawn neo-Nazis. They're the biggest anti-Euro, Euro-skeptic. Remember, all of that right-wing populist vermin, Farage, Le Pen, Alternatives for Germany, Grillo, those are your anti-Euro. Why? Because in many cases they're working for the U.S. Embassy or the British Embassy or somebody who has a vested interest in bringing down the Euro. I would especially cite the program here, which Syriza from its program in the previous time around, they talked about efforts to get control of the European Central Bank and then use that to build national projects and others. Let's just see if we can find this. This is from it's from an earlier election, right? 2012, I guess it is. So here we go. The proposal coming forward at that time, and this is an extremely radical proposal to attack the so-called independence of the European Central Bank, demand that the European Union change the role of the European Central Bank so that it finances states, meaning national states, governments, national governments, and programs of public investment. And it's that program of public investment that I like most, because that is saying the infrastructure window. That would be the $6 to $7 trillion European infrastructure window. Demand that the European Union change the role of the European Central Bank so that it finances states. If you have a budget crisis, they've got to be in there. But above all, the public investment, because that is the path to the durable economic recovery. So that was Syriza by itself. And we know that that was discussed with Mélenchon, the leader of the French leftist forces in that year. Okay, to say it again, mass traction economic demands, new deal. Nix Malthus, pro-labor, pro-worker, pro-infrastructure, not slave of the left-right spectrum, principled alliances, and above all, a firm focus on power. What the anarchist, of course, says is a scandal. Shouldn't do that. Now, so we'll talk about some of the good things they did just savor the moment. On Monday, 26th of January, what was Tsipras' day like? Well, first thing, he wrapped up the coalition, voted, you know, he's officially prime minister, brings in Knos and the independent Greeks. Kamenos gets the defense ministry. First thing he does, goes to visit the monument to the victims of Nazi terror and SS terror at Kaiserani. 200 Greek resistance fighters slaughtered by the SS. That sets the stage for the negotiation with Merkel. Then receives the Russian ambassador, gets a personal letter from Putin. Be a good idea to go to Moscow soon. Greek finances are going to get tight towards the end of February, the end of next month, in the beginning of March. And having seen what Putin was capable of doing in the case of Yanukovych, I would strongly suggest that an infusion, let's say, of about 5 billion euros or dollars would be a good starting point. I would recommend that Russia get ready for 5 billion now and 5 billion later on, because this experiment must not fail. The Syriza program that I went through with you last week has a price tag of 12 billion, and some of that they can generate by themselves. But when you have a new government, you got to have some capital. You got to get some money in there, a quick loan to stabilize you, right? And Moscow is obviously the one, because of reasons of history, of orthodoxy, right? That the Russian Tsar was the protector of the Orthodox in the Ottoman Empire and later on of Greece, although the British had muscled in on it. So that was the Russian ambassador. Then Tsipras turned around and said, wait a minute, the European Union, Mogherini, unfortunately, is talking about a new round of sanctions on Russia because of what's happening in eastern Ukraine. Wait a minute. We are Greece. We were not consulted. We don't want it. Now, we had to backtrack on that. That may not be the last word. And then we have Varoufakis and others coming forward. On Wednesday, the government announced that privatization would stop. And this is important. They avoided a Chinese takeover of Piraeus and of Thessalonica and of the main public utility. If you are self-respecting, you do not sell off. Report with pride to what we've been able to do in this regard. And if you're looking for the U.S. equivalent, it's us. And above all, that comes down to program. What Occupy said you shouldn't have. Leadership, which no anarchist can imagine. Even though they are leaders, they're all hidden. It's a market of dupes. An organization. Tsipras had to get this from, you know, 2 to 3% 7 or 8 years ago to now the practically the absolute majority with the, at least it's about 40% with the 50 seat winner's bonus, right? Majority bonus. And a strategy, and the strategy was don't give in on austerity. Fight to the end against austerity. No compromises on austerity. Now, stopping privatization. This was one of the conditionalities of the Troika. And now the Chinese government says they're deeply concerned. I strongly suggest the Chinese government to reconsider their position and suck it up, because it is just inadmissible to think that Piraeus and Salonika, Thessalonica and the utilities and the other crown jewels would go into foreign hands. Economic globalization has gone too far. The Chinese have done quite enough, thank you, in these other countries, right? These other countries have got to do it, especially Europe, on their own. Now, this was the turning point for some of these characters from the socialist internet. Socialist is in quotes now. Martin Schulz, the rubbery-looking hack who is the SPD, the socialist, social democratic faction in the European Parliament. He was there and he said, "How dare you? You can't stop privatizations," said the socialist leader. Well, then we had Sigmar Gabriel. Sigmar Gabriel is the head of the SPD, the German Social Democrats, and he is the deputy prime minister of Germany, right? He's Merkel's right-hand man. He lets Merkel stay in office. Can you imagine that? And he started whining, "How dare you stop this?" And then many of these people say, gosh, it's lucky that we don't really need you anymore, because we've found ways over the past 3 years to make sure that if you leave, it won't hurt us. They're talking through their hat. It would hurt them plenty. It would hurt them beyond description. Juncker, the head of the president of the European Commission, says a debt reduction for Greece is not on the radar. Something similar from Moscovici, the Frenchman who is the European Commission economics boss, and so on and so forth. When I look at these so-called social democrats, I think of, Friedrich Ebert, but above all, Noska, right? Noska was the guy in 1918, 1919, who said, somebody's got to be the bloodhound, right? Somebody's got to go out and kill the opposition. So Rosa Luxemburg dead, Liebknecht dead, not by arguments, but by death squads deployed by Noska. Or Hilferding. How about Hilferding? Big leader of the SPD in the 1920s. Great friend of Brüning. And he's the one who led the opposition to Wojtynski when Wojtynski wanted to say, let's have 3 billion Reichsmarks, public works, build the Autobahn, cut Hitler off at the knees by ending austerity and deflation. Hilferding said, no, you're violating Marxist theory. How about that? So that's the use of Marxist theory that these characters have. Now, the rebellion on the sanctions is very promising, because we saw that Hollande was already saying the sanctions against Russia must end. And you'll recall that Italy, even though we have Renzi, behind Renzi is Berlusconi, and that's Putin's great friend, Italy, Hungary with Orbán, right, immediately attacked by the West, Slovakia, Cyprus, and there are more. Those are all countries. And again, it would be Greece, France, Italy, Hungary, Slovakia, Cyprus, who would be interested in putting an end to these insane economic sanctions. So, payments deadline, end of March, end of February, early March. Russia, please engage. And we have to recall that sometimes in the past, Russia has not done such a good job for the Greeks. I'm thinking of Stalin and the percentages deal that Stalin had in October 1944 with Churchill. Remember, Stalin said Greece is 90% British and 10% Soviet. And with that, they failed to support the Greek partisan uprising in December 1944. They said General Scobie treat it like a conquered province. And that, of course, led to the Truman Doctrine of 1947. We had a NATO coup in Greece, 1967 to 1974, the government of the fascist colonels. So some of these powers have some making up to do to the Greeks. Now, we also want to look at the dynamics of this bailout. You recall that the first bailout was contemporaneous with the flash crash of May 2010. And that imposed these austerity measures, right, cutting the minimum wage, cutting pensions, the privatizations. Remember, Steve Forbes went over there and thought he could buy the Parthenon, that toothy geek. And, of course, the idea of leaving the euro is extremely unpalatable because the drachma by itself would be clobbered in much the same way that the Icelandic kronor has been, that would be essentially very bad, right? The drachma would become virtually worthless, and you would have some idea of extreme inflation, maybe even hyperinflation, as that was attacked. just a useful way to discuss this. There is a proposal saying split the euro between the north, dominated by Germany, Holland, Scandinavia, and the south. And somebody said, well, what's that going to do? Germany, you actually need Italy, Greece. You need the pigs, right? Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. You need them. Because if you had the northern euro, that would go to $3 or $4 per euro, right? You'd be completely priced out of every export market in the world. You'd undergo a depression. And the south euro would go down to 5 cents on the dollar, or 5 cents on the euro. You could buy a euro for 5 American cents, and that wouldn't be so good either. So there is a logic to the euro, and meddlers, who are just arriving on the scene should please, back off. Now, Varoufakis last Friday had an interview. I believe it's the Canadian program As It Happens. Now let's listen to Varoufakis. He says, you know, the General Motors bailout might be a good way for people in North America to understand the situation of Greece. What was it? You recall, old General Motors and old Chrysler had gone bankrupt primarily through derivatives, but generally as a result of, plummeting car sales in the derivatives panic, the world derivatives panic of 2008. So these two companies were put through a mix, really, of Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, Chapter 7 liquidation, and they were given debtor in possession financing by the U.S. government, some by the Canadian government. Some of this came from the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program. But let's just look at what happened to the bondholders, okay? Because that's the idea, right, with this debt question. The secured bondholders of Chrysler Corporation got 29 cents on the dollar. So Varoufakis is offering 50 cents on the dollar. I would take that, because if you had Chrysler bonds, you'd be getting 29 cents on the dollar. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Bailout of 2009 and the Chrysler bailout of 2009 with the proposed haircut, the cutting in half, writing off of half of Greece's current $320 billion debt. Now remember, there are only 11 million Greeks. So if it's 320 billion euros, this comes out to about 34,000 euros per person, is too much. And remember the proposals, right? The average pension with the Syriza program is to raise that pension from about 575 euros per month to 750 euros per month. And it's going to take a lot of months to get 34,000 euros. So that's unsustainable. That was done by these cretinous advisors. One of the good things Varoufakis did was to fire a bunch of pro-IMF consultants and other parasites who were working for the finance ministry and bring back the cleaning ladies. A little bit of economic justice, a little bit of class-conscious economic policy. It's a good idea. So, once again, Chrysler bondholders in the 2009 bailout got 29 cents on the dollar. Now, the General Motors process is a little bit more complex, but it looks to me like some General Motors bondholders, and Chrysler had more bonds proportionally than General Motors, the General Motors bondholders got something like 30 cents on the dollar, so about the same. But we do have stories of a woman at the height of the crisis in 2009, who goes on CNN and saying she had $70,000 worth of GM bonds, and this was cut down to $200 worth of stock, although I think some of that has gone up, but it didn't go back to $70,000. And during the course of the bailout, during 2009, in the early days of the Obama administration, a bunch of hedge funds came out and said, hey, we want our money back 100 cents on the dollar. And Obama held a press conference in April 2009 where he said, you hedge funds are profiteers. Maybe that can put the whining of the various, European Central Bank and similar institutions, put that in perspective. The UAW pension plan supposedly getting a sweetheart deal. They got 40 cents on the dollar. So you see. Now, there have even been Greek haircuts. The principle of the haircut has been accepted by the European Commission and the European Central Bank. There was, for example, in 2012, a haircut. This is a write-down of European debt. It was supposed to be 54%, but this was directed against the private holders of government bonds. So it meant that through various machinations, the haircut didn't amount to anything because all of the people who were shielded were things like the European Central Bank, and then they had to be compensated and made whole. And as soon as you did that, you added that to what the Greeks owed. So that's why we're still at this huge debt, which has gone up, right, from 120% of GNP to 180% of GNP. Now, Tsipras is going to France this coming week and to Italy. It is time for persons of goodwill everywhere to manifest their support for Tsipras and Syriza. You can do this wherever there is a European Union office. Go there and protest. Down with Juncker. Down with Moscovici. Down with Draghi in the European Central Bank, of course. Wherever there's an International Monetary Fund office, down with you. You're the Troika. Down with the Troika in general. If there's a German consulate, BRD consulate, right? Bundesrepublik Deutschland, go there and protest. If there's a Greek consulate, go and give them some moral support. You get the idea. But it's time to move. It's time to move in this direction. Rippling out from Greece, there are two layers, right? One is the first that I've just gone through, that Italy, conceivably even France, but Hungary, Slovakia, Cyprus, and others could say, enough with this, enough with the sanctions against Russia, economic choking, and enough with this lunatic austerity program. Enough with Schäuble. Schäuble. The German finance minister was thought to be the evil genius of this stuff, right? Schäuble somehow remembers 1923 and hyperinflation. Well, there's no sign of that. It's a figment of Rupert Murdoch's imagination from Sky TV. And of course, the Paltards will want to talk about hyperinflation. They've been promising us hyperinflation for the last 7 or 8 years. Hasn't happened. But what Schäuble doesn't remember is the crash of 1929, which within 4 years gave you Hitler, and in particular, the Brüning government from the spring of 1930 to the summer of 1932, by cutting two billion marks at that time out of the German budget, imposed killer austerity, wrecked the political system, wrecked the financial system, and opened the door wide to Hitler. So again, deflation is worse than hyperinflation. Deflation leads to fascism. Italy, 1922, as a result of the deflationary crash of 1920. Germany, same story, 1929 to 1933, Hitler's seizure of power. It's a wonderful time. Now, what's with Spain? We're looking closely at this Podemos party under Iglesias, Pablo Iglesias, who seems to talk primarily about income inequality. We're going to have to look into it. Right now, Podemos is polling at 28%, the reactionary pro-austerity ghoul Rajoy at 19%. Elections during the current year, I believe. Therefore, I would solicit from listeners in Spain, friends of the broadcast in Spain or others who know about this, send us some guidance about this. Obviously, it was a great thing to see Podemos get on the scoreboard in the European election last year. But how did that happen? Was that a sociological phenomenon, or was it helped along? And if so, by who? So we're gonna keep an open mind about this. We might want to get a spokes. Let's see what we can do. Now, Habermas, the the current representative of German philosophy is Jürgen Habermas of the Frankfurt School. And his line is, it's a response to Schäuble. Schäuble had written a news article or an op-ed saying, in effect, we Germans do not want to Germanize Europe, right? We're not asking for a Germanized kind of Europe. So therefore, you should back off from the austerity. And then Schäuble had said, we don't want the Germanized Europe. So Habermas comes in and says, look, you are dishonest. You claim you don't want to Germanize Europe, but you are absolutely ignoring the terrible, destructive social consequences of this austerity program in Southern Europe. And one of these is the rise of fascism, right? The Krissi Avgi, the movement of the Golden Dawn, absolutely fascist. And that's a creature of the economic policies which Schäuble is pushing as being typically European. Well, this is this a fraud, right? This is a bad, bad scene. And I'm afraid, though, that Habermas has no answer, right? We checked with Habermas after 9/11. He pretty much struck out at that point. But let's see if we might find a good quote from Habermas. And again, this is the what's left of the Frankfurt School. The article is from August of 2013, and he goes through the fact that this is destroying the basis for stability. The key quote is Ludwig Gehio, German historian. Germany is too weak to dominate the continent, but too strong to get in line with the other sisters. How are we getting back to this in the economic realm? Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome to World Crisis Radio, our second hour. And without further ado, we're going to go to Athens, Greece, and get the lowdown. Now, we're going to be talking to Michael Chiotinis. Before he begins, I've got to congratulate him. Thanks to Michael Chiotinis, the listeners to this program knew in advance that Tsipras and Syriza would not listen to the siren song of Stavros Theodorakis and the River Party, right? The Topatomi Party. No, no, no. They would go directly to the Anel, the independent Greeks of Kamenos. And so it has been. So that's obviously it shows that Michael Chiotinis knows what's going on. I know he wants to talk to us about one of the next formal steps, which is who's going to be the president of the republic, because remember that's how this entire thing started. But right now we got to go to the thick of things. Michael is right there at the battlefront. What does it look like? What are the main dangers? What are the main opportunities?
Hello, Webster. Well, as excited as I am about the change that has come to Greece, and as tempting as it is to begin and analyze every ministerial assignment and all hope and goodwill that has returned to the Greek people, and you can see this on the streets, well, we have to talk about real issues here, and I have to warn about certain things. Thank you very much for giving me credit for the correct predictions. And I was actually talking about the need for the independent Greeks to get inside parliament and form a government with Syriza. And I knew what I was saying about this, because what I'm really afraid of is a civil war type polemic from the opposition and a subversion of the government on civil war lines. And that's, I think, a very big danger. Now, right now, the previous establishment, the local kleptocracy that was always aligned with the Euro clergy, this invisible priesthood of the Euro oligarchy that makes the decisions, and we never know who makes the decisions, but, you know, the Euro oligarchy, this establishment in Greece that supported this Euro oligarchy is dying, and it seems that it's not ready to go quite so easily. I'm afraid I have to bore you with some details concerning New Democracy now, the Conservative Party, that is the main political formation representing this old system. Now, before the current leader, Mr. Samaras, there was Kostas Karamanlis, prime minister up until he lost the election to Papandreou's government. Papandreou's government was the one who brought us the Troika. And
there are actually two generations of Karamanlis that I'm aware of, right? There was the older Karamanlis, and now there's a newer one, and that's who you're talking about, is the son or one of the heir.
Three generations of Papandreou's, but anyway.
Right.
Papandreou won the election from Karamanlis and brought us this despicable bailout. Now, Karamanlis, the former leader of the Conservatives, always maintained the image of a centrist moderate. He wasn't a true right-wing. Policies were mildly Keynesian, and he always preferred the economic model, which at the time seemed from a conservative point of view, stupid conservative point of view, a viable model, which we now know that it's not.
Michael, I wonder, we're having trouble hearing you. You're breaking up. Is there anything you could adjust that might strengthen the signal?
I will try. Do you hear me now?
Sounds better now.
Okay. Now, his policies, Karamanlis' policies, were mildly Keynesian, as I said, and he tried to follow the Irish economic model, which at the time seemed, from a conservative point of view, as a viable. We now know that it's not. Now, Samaras, who succeeded Karamanlis at the leadership of New Democracy, the prime minister up until a week ago, he took a hard right turn, taking in MPs from a far-right political party, not Golden Dawn, but another political party, somewhere between Golden Dawn and the Conservatives. Now, the people surrounding Samaras, his very close team, were extreme right-wingers. And he gave key government positions to these characters. Now, these characters have become now the main spokesman for the Conservatives. But the essence, I don't want to go into much detail, but the essence here is that these people that also come from the era of the military dictatorship in Greece are, in my view, dreaming and in fact working on a scenario according to which Syriza fails in the negotiations with the EU, doesn't come to an agreement, causes a Grexit or chaos. Actually, they are preparing chaos. Chaos is being, the government speaks subverted to create chaos. And then the government collapses and the left is out of power for another 100 years or 200 years. What I was saying before the election is that we need a strong, culturally anti-austerity on the one hand, but on the other hand, culturally right-wing party to absorb the cultural right-wing of the Greek electorate, and we need a party on these lines with significant presence. And I always hoped that the independent Greeks would play this role, and because times are very rough, and create this new right wing of Greece. Now, how can this be done? How can that be done right now? In my view, New Democracy, the conservatives, have to break up. And the only one who can break them up is Karamanlis, the previous leader, in which people have faith. People still have faith in him because he bears a historical name, because he was very loved when he was prime minister. For all sorts of reasons, right-wingers look up to Karamanlis. And I think his decision on whether he will accept the offer to become the president of the republic, or if he tries and play a more active political role in the political system inside parliament, his decision on what he will do will be a key in forming, in the forming or not, of this big right-wing party that is needed to avoid the civil war. That's my concern, and that's my alert that I have to put out. Now,
Michael, let me just say, the scenario you're talking about is, I think, quite realistic. Certainly the CIA and the U.S. intelligence community would be delighted to see a collapse of Syriza, a provoked exit of Greece from the euro. That would cause terrible damage to the euro. The dollar and the pound would benefit. The CIA would love that. And then the 200 years of reactionary or fascist rule. That's eminently reasonable from the point of view of the U.S. intelligence people.
We also have to point out here that Karamanlis was the only prime minister of Greece ever to have said no to NATO, to have vetoed NATO decisions, and he was big on Russian diplomacy, on diplomacy, Putin diplomacy actually. He was very close with them, and we are aware of a possible assassination attempt by the CIA.
Against Karamanlis. Very interesting. Hang on, we're going to be right back with Michael Chiotinis from Athens and the lowdown on what's actually going on, the fight for Syriza to win through to prosperity and recovery. Back in a minute. Back to World Crisis Radio. Getting a fascinating briefing and alarming from Michael Chiotinis in Athens. On the one hand, it would be highly advantageous for the conservative politician Karamanlis to become president of the republic for reasons of stability. But those NATO thugs from the colonel's dictatorship, as we mentioned before, 67 to 74, seem to have other ideas, and they may go violent at any time. So please pick it up where you left off.
Yes, they may become, I don't know in what way they might become violent, but they're certainly dreaming. This guy, there's a guy named Voridis, who was telling before the election that we will not allow for the left to govern Greece ever, by any means, by all means. We will avoid a left government, and now we have a left government. He was actually the leader of the youth of the dictatorship at that point, and he is now an MP for the Conservatives, unfortunately. Now, we had today a very, very serious meeting between the Eurogroup leader, the president of the Eurogroup, Mr. Dijsselbloem, and the Greek finance minister, Varoufakis. He was actually the one who addressed the UFAA conference, if you remember.
Right. I've told our listeners the story already in the program, but yes, you're right.
Yes, he's the finance minister now for Greece. He is, in my view, the most qualified for the job, and I'm excited to have him as the finance minister. And we had today the first episode of negotiations between Varoufakis and Dijsselbloem. He was actually here in Greece. They gave an interview, joint interview, press interview, and he talked about he actually tries to be very to appear that he wants, that Greece wants to cooperate. Greece wants to cooperate with the European Commission, with the IMF, with every institution, but it has to be institutions, and negotiations have to take place on a political level, not in the technocratic level, which was the rhetorical tactic of the conservatives, that, you know, we talk with the technocrats, and the technocrats, of course, when you talk only with technocrats, technocrats apply the method that has been given to them, the memorandum, the IMF, the Washington Consensus, actually. And Varoufakis brought something new. He said, we will talk politically, but we will not talk, we refuse to cooperate with technocrats that only want to apply a certain logic that, in our view, is anti-European. And he's absolutely right on this. And at that moment, Dijsselbloem stood and walked out of the room. And it has become a whole panic that negotiations have ended, and there's a clash between Greece and the EU. This is not the case. Everyone expects to see the kind of things in the negotiation, and we are very optimistic about the ongoing negotiation. But say that they don't come to an agreement, and I think they will, because if they wanted Greece out of the Eurozone, Greece would be out of the Eurozone right 3 or 4 years ago, in my view.
Right.
I think Greece is still in the Eurozone, because the Eurozone is not viable without Greece. If a country exits the Eurozone, the Eurozone has no future. Let's be honest on this. And I read an article Krugman wrote on the New York Times, I think, that he says, you think that Greece can go out of the Eurozone and the Eurozone be left standing? Well, you want to make a bet on it? It can't be done. It will,
of course,
it
not. Can't be
done. Yes.
In terms of this threat that you're pointing out, right? Russia today just had a German academic on there. I'm looking him up. Who is he? Right, Marcus Kerber, K-E-R-B-E-R. He says the Syriza government is not a government. It's a gang. It's a coalition of unreason and conspiracy. And despite the great generosity of the Eurozone, Greece has made no effort to reform. There's no reform. There's only blackmail. This is a cancer that must be stopped. Now, when you hear violent language like that, you might say reactionary circles, NATO and so forth, may indeed be preparing something ugly.
And that's the big danger right now. But the Syriza government has done the correct thing of not creating a climate of clash. They are creating a climate of cooperation. We want to cooperate, we want to negotiate, but we want to make it a deal that is viable for Greece as well as for Europe. We cannot be part of a postponement of the future, because that's what they're doing. That's what the Germans are doing. That's what the Euro oligarchy is doing. They're just postponing to deal with the issue, and the issue is the architecture of the Eurozone, the deflation going on right now in the Eurozone. The Eurozone is on a downward spiral as an economy, as an economy of 19 countries right now.
So, let me just ask you, Michael, Tsipras is going to France and Italy this coming week. And we also noticed that the first foreign representative that he called in was the Russian ambassador. I have been putting out this idea that Russia, Putin, having lost a lot of money in Ukraine on a dubious Yanukovych, Russia should come forward with something like a $5 billion support loan and maybe hold another $5 billion in readiness for later on. But something like this, that Russia, if they want to help, they need to think about.
But Russia could be ready to help in a case of emergency.
Okay. I'm afraid our time is gone. Michael, we hope to have you back next week and indeed for quite a while. So I hope you carve out some time Friday evening for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. And we'll be back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Just in line with Varoufakis telling Dijsselbloem of the European finance ministers that he that Greece will not talk to the Troika, only with governments, not with supranational entities. That's very in the spirit of De Gaulle. The New York Stock Exchange down 250 points on the Dow, minus 1.3% on the S&P 500. It's a 3% loss for January. Very bad omen. And this has been the biggest monthly decline in a year for the Standard & Poor's 500 index. So maybe some tremors now. People realize how much they need Greece. Believe me, Greece leaving the euro, driven out by Merkel, kicked out by Juncker and Moscovici and Draghi, that would be an absolute disaster. That would be a cataclysm. Don't listen to anybody who tells it to you any other way. But now, let's go on to listen to some analysis from Daniela Walls. She, of course, the chairperson of the Tax Wall Street Party, who has taken a tremendously important role in helping Reverend Edward Pinckney and his legal defense and his political defense. And she's also fresh from our leadership seminar that we held here in the Washington, D.C. area the previous weekend. And, of course, the conclusion was a victory party, very joyful moment that at the end of our educational weekend, the news came in that Syriza was taking over the Greek government. First left-wing government in Greece ever in history, going back to Socrates, going back to Herodotus, 3,000 years, first left-wing government. Daniela, tell us about the Pinckney situation. What can we do?
I said last week, and it remains the same this week, that we have all the confidence in the world that Reverend Pinckney's hearing has been set for February 24th at 1 p.m., If you have something of interest connecting Gail Freeling, she also goes by Gail Schumacher Freeling or Gail Schumacher. It's her married name, to either Clerk Sharon Tyler or Sheriff Paul Bailey, please contact me immediately at taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. If you have direct personal contact with any of these individuals, if you live in Benton Harbor, St. Joseph, or Three Oaks, then please contact me. If we don't have a photo or a phone record, or Gail with the prosecution, witness testimony is the next best thing. We need to prove the connection between juror Gail Freeling and either County Clerk Sharon Tyler or County Sheriff Paul Bailey. The connections are there. They are on paper that they are work colleagues, and this is easy to find on a Google search, but the prosecution says that even though they are work colleagues, that doesn't necessarily mean that they physically met or spoke. So we need this hard evidence to free Reverend Pinckney. We need a photo of them together. We are trying to subpoena Gail's phone records, as you suggested last week. And if you are a witness that has seen them together or heard them talking, we need to speak to you as soon as possible. If you want to see a picture of what these three look like, so you know what you're looking for in pictures when you do your own research, visit freepinckney.wordpress.com to read the article titled Busted. Or you can visit her Facebook page, Gail Schumacher Freeling. Don't be shy about this. Gail Freeling was identified during the trial as a racist. And so far, this research has shown that she is heavily connected to the local establishment and prosecution. The prosecutor, Mike Sepik, wrote in his response to our arguments that this Gail juror knew the prosecution, that she didn't meet them in person. She only knew of them. We looked over the prosecutor's Sepik's motions, and they're feebly put together in typical, like, government work, meaning his responses are very pro forma but deficient in substantive arguments. So I need the audience to help us prove this connection. Again, if you are around the Three Oaks, Michigan area and need more instruction, then contact me. And I would like to give my personal take on Syriza. I don't know how much you've covered, please. But from my own personal experience being the party chair and the vision we have for how this should go, I want to cover what I think Syriza did well. They had a program. Our program is stronger, clearer, and more suited to the United States. but we have many points in common, and the two most important things being to stop austerity and to use the central bank to finance a recovery program. They have organization. Syriza knows the United Front model in action. They have brought along fractured microgroups without bowing, this is important, to any demands outside their program to capture their government. So now they have a foothold from which to strengthen the organization and hold on to that power. On a daily basis, Webster, I get calls from different organizations or parties that say, you know, hey, we'll ally if you just add, let's say, urban bike lanes to the top of your five major economic demands. And I say no, and they say, you know, okay, we'll still join. So for the most part, if urban bike lanes means more to them than 30 million new jobs, then I say, have you any idea of the world crisis? Do you realize how close we could be to cataclysmic events? Our party has to move fast. There is a timetable. Our party, and I recognize this, it is an objective timetable. So you, urban bike lane person, or petty bourgeois process reform people have no idea of necessity. And necessity doesn't seem to exist for them. I know, and our party knows, that there is a necessity, and that therefore sometimes you have to move fast and sacrifice some of your smaller concerns for getting forces into the field and getting them fighting and putting the Wall Street sales tax and nationalizing the Fed for 30 million new productive jobs on the scoreboard. Another thing is that they had leadership. See, something that was poo-pooed by the Occupy crowd. Tsipras shows us now what a real leader looks like. He's professional, pragmatic. He has a global outlook. He makes public overtures toward Russia and Germany. He's the only opposition figure in the EU who wants to hold the EU together so he can use the central bank as an engine of recovery. And what we learned from this weekend at Euroconathon is that many activists live in subjective reality, the reality of feeling states. And at the Tax Wall Street Party, it is our job to be vigilant, to go from subjective, our feeling states, like I said, to things that are our verifiable objective reality. We represent a higher level of what is going on in the world. This is real. This is what we try to represent. We try to know objective necessities, and then we try to act accordingly. In our opinion, activism fails when it proceeds according to silly little likes and dislikes. And the cause of civilization demanded that we come out fast and we talked actual program, be it the Wall Street sales tax or be it seizing the and nationalizing the Federal Reserve. What I mean, an activist, what is your program? What do you, when I meet an activist, like, I'll say, what is your program? What do you stand for? What is your morality? With everything that you do, what is your aim? What is all of it pointing to? The Tax Wall Street Party knows where we are pointing. We have taken direct aim at the banks and Wall Street to protect people. And that's my personal take and the party's personal take on what they did well. And in general, I would say Syriza shows the power of program and mass traction economic issues. It shows the power of a strong leader like Alexis Tsipras, who is in service to a program. I will see you next week, Webster. I hear.
Okay, Daniela, thank you so much, and you're absolutely right. Imperious necessity looms over us all, and it's a problem we've got to learn to solve, not dodge. See you next week.
See you next week.
Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our final segment here on January 30th of 2015. Stock market down after Greek finance minister told the Dutch finance minister to disappear, that Greece would only talk to national authorities, not to international entities, supranational entities. Now, let's look at a couple of war scares going on, right? This past week, Bibi Netanyahu is behind in the polls. Bibi is behind Lapid and Tipsy, we've always called her Tipsy Livni, Tzipi Livni, Netanyahu could lose. That's why he's insisting on this affront to Obama coming here with no invitation. The Republicans showing, I think, a terrible lack of seriousness in this entire thing. But with Netanyahu behind, it looks like an orchestrated clash in the Sheba Farms area. Easy to get a clash there. And you'll remember that according to a, I think it's a Haaretz poll cited by France 24, 40% of Israelis think that the current increase in Middle East tensions between Israel and neighbors, that this is all deliberate, right? Killing the Iranian general and so forth. This is part of the Netanyahu scare campaign to get elected. So that's one. Ukraine, we've had a raving article from Soros, you can find it, demanding more actions against Ukraine, right? That sanctions regime could fall apart at any moment, thanks to a number of people, but most prominently Syriza at this time. The reason why the pro-Russian forces went on an offensive lately was incessant, constant Ukrainian shelling. And this means these fascist brigades that they have. The fascist forces of Kiev were constantly shelling and bombarding the pro-Russian position. So they drove them off beyond any patience. And as a result, once you're counterattacking that, you might as well go all the way to Mariupol. So this is not of interest to the United States. This is part of the Russian sphere. We should butt out, not one dime, not one GI for the Kiev fascist clique. The derivatives forces, right? The finance oligarchs are in trouble in Trani, in southern Italy. That brave, exemplary, remarkable public prosecutor, district attorney Michele Ruggiero. You recall he's getting after Moody's and Standard & Poor's. He just put out subpoenas to Mario Draghi, of the head of the European Central Bank, saying, you come here to Trani and we're going to depose you, right? You're going to have to answer questions under oath. Romney will not run for president. I'm so disappointed. I was hoping to sell more copies of my Just Too Weird book, but it was not to be. And the reason that Just Too Weird book is so important is that that's got the best rundown on how Rand Paul and Ron Paul operate, right? Nepotism and this entire fake campaign that we had. Now, Ron Paul, that notorious copperhead and doughface, is showing his true colors. Here he is at a confab, and it's reported in the Washington Post January 26th. A lot of times people think of secession, they paint it as an absolute negative, said Ron Paul. After all, the American Revolution was a kind of secession. You mean we should have been obedient to the king forever? So it's all in the way you look at it. Well, Ron Paul, you are stark raving mad. You're a traitor. That is treason, what you've just said. You're always prating about the Constitution. Hey, secession is not among the enumerated powers. What would Jefferson say? It's not an enumerated power. It's not in there. There's no provision for secession. So what are you talking about? And, of course, the idea is that this is now becoming an embarrassment to little Rand. Little Rand, who said, a lot of those people on Social Security disability are fakers, right? They're gold bricks. They're trying to get money when they're not really sick. This is just despicable. And now maybe with Syriza in town, we can see what a good class-conscious, class-oriented orientation looks at. And, of course, the inevitable thing, they're wondering, why is Rand Paul such a sellout, right? Why is he such a disappointment? He's not as good as Ron. He's not as fanatic as Ron. He wants to – he's on the make. So one guy says, maybe Rand Paul is pretending to be a neocon, and if he gets into power, he'll revert to libertarianism, a libertarian Manchurian candidate. So these poor, dumb guys, these dupes and gulls, are going to say, oh, Rand Paul looks awful on the surface, but he knows what he's doing. He's going to come out of the closet as a real libertarian once he gets to the White House. They're talking about the seminar where he spoke, where Ron spoke, a one-day seminar in breaking away from the central state. What is this, Robinson Crusoe? This is crackpot stuff. This is lamentable. Now, the one thing I do want to point out, though, Obama can be bullied. And that's what I want to say. There's all kinds of news, right? Some positive. There's a lot of negative news, though, right? You gotta play this differentiated. Washington Post this morning, Friday, January 30th, Obama budget sets stage for spending fight. The idea being that Obama wants to toss out the Satan sandwich of 2011, get rid of those caps, get rid of the sequester, propose new capital gains taxes, new bank taxes, and, of course, the Republicans are already screaming it would break the sequestration orders. And the bait for the Republicans is, hey, Republicans, you McCain, you're all screaming that the caps and the sequestration is destroying the Pentagon. You're right. But that's then you can't just do the Pentagon. You got to get everybody made whole, everybody restored. So that's fine. But at the same time, Obama and GOP leaders agree on the need for fast track trade powers. No. Never happened. Roll it back. No Trans-Pacific Partnership, nothing of the kind. Keystone Pipeline, hey, Obama, use that one as a bargaining chip pipeline. 750,000 miles of pipeline, much older, much more likely to leak than this one. I frankly don't see it, right? The struggle against infrastructure is just a generally really bad thing, right? From Pepe Grillo to the Jonglei Canal in Sudan, where the machine got blown up. So now let's consider what we know about Obama. Obama can be successfully bullied. Obama was planning to abolish the 529 plans. That is to say, it's a way to do a prepaid and tax favored, right? Tax, not exactly exempt, but I think it's a significant savings on taxes. With the tax break on these 529 college plans, Obama had said in the State of the Union he wanted to get rid of this tax break, but there was a hue and cry, and the White House has retreated. Now, that means, dear friends, that if we get enough hue and cry, Obama could retreat on all sorts of things. Obama can be had. He's responding to public outrage on some of this stuff. So if the 529s can be saved, time to press for the Wall Street sales tax, time to press for no free trade, time to press for stop with Russia sanctions, and a number of other things. So, want to hang out the party, taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. I'm at tarpon.net, tarpon.net. Get the news there, and we'll see you next week.